Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Monday, July 29th. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Hill Fire now over 60% contained, 4 elk illegally poached using lead ammunition, and gangs believed to be targeting Mendocino County youth. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. The Hill Fire is more than 60% contained, which may lead to a decrease in evacuation orders and warnings for residents in northeastern Humboldt and western Trinity.
My name is Sean Morrissey. I am a public information officer with the California Incident Management Team, and we are working on the Hill Fire up in Six Rivers National Park. So this incident began on July 15th at around 5:40 p.m., still under investigation how it started. So they're still looking into that. I'm sure that'll eventually come out. But right now, it is about 7,224 acres have been burned. It is at 61% containment. And crews are still working on mopping up and doing some suppression repair and just generally cleaning up and trying to get things back to normal.
Last week, there were concerns on the eastern flank of the fire, which is to the west of the Burnt Ranch community, due to a slop over where the fire crossed control lines and spread east. However, he said those hazards have been mitigated.
Yeah, so that happened on Sugar Wolf Mountain a couple days ago. Crews went right after that. They did some direct attacks, and they had some aerials, helicopters, and fixed-wing aircraft do some drops on it. They have that contained, and it's just getting mopped up now. Crews are still working on it, just putting out some hot spots.
Crews are focused on patrolling the containment lines and mopping up hot spots, specifically at Mosquito Creek, Buck Creek, and Spike Buck Mountain, where stubborn fuels continue to smolder. Unmanned aircraft fixed with infrared cameras are helping to detect heat throughout the fire area. 1,100 personnel remain committed to the Hill Fire, which is 1,000 less than last week, as crews move out to other high-priority fires in the state. But as for when we may see full containment, he stated.
So I don't want to give a timetable of how long it's going to take to be fully out and just fully extinguished. Things like this, you know, there could always be some sort of burning left over. So they're going to be very, very positive before they say it's completely contained and extinguished. But I'll tell you, the crews have made great, great efforts over the last few weeks, working night and day. With the climate and how hot and dry it's been recently, and this very, very steep terrain, I was out there the other day, and some of these drop-offs and mountains and ridges are very, very steep. The fact that these firefighters were able to, you know, get ahead of it and cut dozer line and hand line and get hoses in there and engines, it's very impressive work. They've really done a great job. And they put in a lot of proactive measures, crews, and there was good strategy behind it. And I think they were able to, along with the temperature then getting more moderate and then a little bit of humidity coming back, both of those, the proactive strategies and the temperature kind of both played a part in you know, helping it being contained. These crews worked really, really hard. They did a phenomenal job. All odds were against them, I think, on letting this get much bigger. They've saved some really, really great resources and a lot of great forests. So I think they should be highly, highly commended for it.
A lifting marine layer will surround the fire over the next couple days, bringing unusually moderate relative humidity and cool temperatures, helping in suppression efforts. Friday Ridge Road at Route 6 and Titlow Hill Road off of Highway 299 remain closed, as evacuation orders and warnings remain in place. However, he speculates that could soon change.
People have been a little bit curious about, you know, when roads might be opening back up and things like that. But there have been discussions and evaluations about which orders and warnings might be reduced or maybe taken away. But that's going to be in discussion now. And hopefully, you know, if anyone wants to look, they can keep their eyes open to the Humboldt County Sheriff's website and also the Trinity County website for any updates regarding that stuff. So hopefully it should be coming down soon.
According to ncweb.wildfire.gov, the official fire information page for the United States Forest Service, they estimate that the Hill Fire will be fully contained and demobilized by August 15th. The fire is now 7,224 acres and 61% contained. Yesterday, Sunday, July 28th, the Coast Guard and CAL FIRE utilized air resources to locate an injured hiker a half mile north of Black Sands Beach near Shelter Cove.
This trail is not an easy trail.
That was Cheryl Anthony, spokesperson with Shelter Cove Volunteer Fire.
It is not for somebody who's a beginner in the line of hiking.
Anthony explained that the CAL FIRE copter 902 successfully rescued the patient and transported them to the Shelter Cove Airport, where they were taken to the Garberville Hospital for medical attention. Despite the leg injury, Anthony explained that this incident had a better outcome than most, as Shelter Cove Volunteer Fire frequently rescues individuals on that stretch of beach.
I think we have probably at least 10 a year. And they're not always in the summertime. Sometimes there are people who think they can hike that in the winter. But it is a dangerous place to be hiking, especially for a beginning hiker, because there are rocks that can slide and fall on top of you or create or it could completely cover up the trail you were on. So you really have to be prepared for anything to happen because you're not near a telephone. And that's another thing. You should have some kind of device to notify people if you run into trouble. Some kind of radio or, I don't know, whatever you can find in the sporting goods store that would cover. Because many times people are hurt and nobody's around. And it takes hours for somebody to come for help. So it's not for a beginner. Let me just say that. It's a very beautiful walk. And it goes for 20 miles from here to Petrolia. But it is not for a beginner hiker. You have to be really in good shape physically, and you need to have the right equipment on, like really good hiking boots, and be prepared for just about any kind of weather. Because as we know, the weather changes from day and night, but also along that coast, the weather can change in 15 minutes and become very, very windy or cold and raining, and anything could happen. So you need to be prepared for everything.
For more helpful tips, you can visit blm.gov and search Lost Coast Trail. Four elk were shot and killed in an illegal poaching incident within the Redwood National Park in the northern portion of Humboldt County. And wildlife wardens are asking for the public's assistance. For more, we spoke with Chief Ranger Stephen Troy.
I manage the program that involves law enforcement and emergency services up here at Redwood National and State Parks. From what we know, a private citizen discovered the elk and reported it and eventually got its way to us. And so rangers and game wardens with California Fish and Wildlife responded to the area, located four elk that had been shot. And a particular note that's very uncommon is nothing was harvested from the elk. They were just left in place dead, which is very unusual.
While some illegal poaching may occur due to food insecurities, the four elk that were killed were not harvested.
This is the first time I've seen an incident where the elk are just left behind here at Redwood. You know, the times that we've seen poaching in the past, they were harvested in some fashion, right? Whether it was the meat or the mount or something along those lines, something was taken. This is the first time that we've seen them shot and left behind.
Officers also determined that lead shot was used to kill the elk, which is the single largest threat to the California condor.
Part of this incident that's concerning and what we've seen in a lot of the recent poaching over the past few years is folks, of course, using lead shot to either poach or hunt the elk. And so what happens, you know, is that the park reintroduced condors a couple of years ago. And, of course, you know, condors will feed on carcasses. And so that lead shot, when it's in the elk, can be ingested by the birds and cause lead poisoning. So it's another unfortunate aspect of this whole incident.
Last year, 5 out of the 8 condors that were recently released by the Yurok tribe were hospitalized due to lead poisoning. Tiana Williams-Clausen, a member of the Yurok Nation and the director of the Yurok Tribe's Wildlife Department, shared an overview on that concerning development in an interview with KMUD last year.
overall largest issue for condors, and probably a major contributing factor to their decline in this area, was the introduction of the use of lead ammunition, which is a novel way of introducing lead into the environment from post-contact. But what was realized only relatively recently, at least in terms of ecological management, was that it is leaving an unintended impact on the environment in which it's used. Because being a soft metal, it actually fragments heavily into literally hundreds of pieces upon impact with a large game animal like a deer or an elk. And while as humans, it's unlikely to majorly impact us just because our digestive system is relatively quick, for avian species like condors or bald eagles or golden eagles or other raptors that have a much slower process, that lead really impacts them heavily and is actually quite lethal.
Foraging for food is a part of becoming a wild condor. But unfortunately, feeding on animals harvested with lead ammunition comes with a big risk for this recovering species.
And so they're finding that about 50%, a little bit more, of California condors recovered in the wild after death are dead due to lead toxicosis.
Ranger Roy noted that the area where the elks were shot is becoming a problematic hotspot.
Where the condors were poisoned happened here as well. And so came out from the Yurok tribe. I know that it occurred at Redwood National Park. So it was the condors that were reintroduced here are the ones that were poisoned. And so, yeah, very, very unfortunate. And so far we have not had that issue with this recent poaching, but the danger is always there. The concern is always there that that could happen. So hunt, you know, poaching of elk, illegal poaching, speaking for the park, I can say it has increased with some regularity from like years past. I worked here for about 10 years, and I would say when I first got here, they were pretty sporadic, maybe once a year, once or twice every couple of years, something pretty low. It was a much more uncommon thing. However, over the last handful of years, you know, I don't have the numbers in front of me from our statistics, but I will say that it's increasing. And anecdotally, it's definitely more than once, sometimes more than two times a year that it's happening up in the Bald Hills area.
Redwood National and State Park Rangers are asking for the public's help in obtaining information on the poaching incident that occurred in the isolated area near Williams Ridge along Bald Hills Road.
The investigation is ongoing with California Department of Fish and Wildlife and us here at Redwood National State Park. So, and yeah, the investigation's underway. We just want the public's assistance. Quite a few folks frequent Bald Hills area, travel through, and so we're hoping that somebody in the local community has either heard something or knows something firsthand and would be willing to share that with us. You know, I know that the herd up there is pretty large. It's a pretty rural area, right? You're out pretty far away from a lot of things. So I think that folks traveling that road can see an opportunity and take that opportunity and feel somewhat safe in taking that opportunity, which is unfortunate, and take some steps to try to combat that.
Roosevelt elk were once near extinction. By the early 1900s, their populations had dramatically declined due to overhunting and habitat loss. The unregulated hunting during the 19th and early 20th century, coupled with extensive logging and land development, significantly reduced their numbers. Today, Roosevelt elk only exist in California within Humboldt, Del Norte, and western Siskiyou counties. Park rangers say they are committed to protecting these animals and urge the public's help in this effort.
We would appreciate their assistance. Poaching is a serious issue for us, and Redwood National State Park here is protecting all the resources in the park, including the elk, which is a keystone species, right? People come from all over the world to see redwood trees and animals like elk in the park, and we're here to protect them. They don't belong just to us, right? They belong to the public. These are resources that belong to the state, and would like their help in determining who shot these elk. And if they have anything they can provide, we'll take any information that they have. And we appreciate everyone's support and willingness to work with us.
Again, on July 21st, four elk had been shot and killed in Redwood National Park on Bald Hills Road. If you have any information on this incident, you can remain anonymous by calling the Cal tip line at 1-888-334-CAL-TIP. That's 888-334-2258. Or the park's anonymous crime tip line, That number is 707-765-7353. You can see a photo of the poached elk on the K-Mud News Facebook page. Turning to Mendocino. The Fort Bragg Police Department has released information regarding the arrest of a local teenager found in possession of an illegal firearm and gang paraphernalia. This incident highlights a concerning trend of youth being targeted for gang recruitment. Chief Neil Cervenka with Fort Bragg Police shares more.
An officer received information that a 17-year-old juvenile male may be in possession of a firearm. That officer wound up taking the information and gathering more information and enough to author and apply for a search warrant. A judge reviewed that application for search warrant and found there was enough probable cause and ordered the residences of the juvenile to be searched for that firearm. The juvenile was associated with a local street gang, which increased the necessity for the active investigation. When the search warrant was served the next morning, both residences were searched. In the first residence, the handgun was located, and ammunition was also located for that firearm. The residence where it was, there was two very young children also living there that would have had access to it, so that juvenile was also charged with child endangerment for having a loaded firearm within reach of a juvenile.
The teenager was booked into the Mendocino County Juvenile Hall on four charges, including being in possession of ammunition, a firearm, and child endangerment. Gang paraphernalia was also confiscated from the juvenile's possession. Notably, earlier this month, a suspected gang member was also arrested for brandishing a firearm at a 13-year-old in Fort Bragg, raising concerns about gang activity in the area.
Oh, absolutely. There's active gang activity on the Mendocino coast. The reason why you're seeing news stories about it is because we're releasing the news stories about the not only the cases that draw a lot of attention, such as a shooting, but you're also seeing releases about the good proactive work our officers are doing where they receive a tip. They do a lot of police work and investigation to develop enough probable cause to serve a search warrant and get those weapons off the street before they're committed in a crime. So a lot of what you're seeing now is the proactive work, but as far as an increase in gang activity, you know, I've only been here 2 years, but I spoke to many of the staff here that have been here for much longer than me, and while we have more gang investigations, it's because of the proactive work that the officers are doing instead of the reactive work that has been done historically.
According to the National Gang Center, a project funded by the Department of Justice, approximately 40% of gang members in the United States are under the age of 18, as gangs often target minors. Chief Cervenka shared a message for the youth who may be vulnerable to gang pressure and stated that help is available.
There's lots of opportunity besides the gangs. One of the things we're doing this year is we're putting a school resource officer into the schools. In cooperation with the Fort Bragg Unified School District. That officer is there to talk about these hard things and to be a resource, an immediate resource for these kids that are being courted by the gangs. A lot of times society is quick to blame parents, but a lot of the parents are working multiple jobs to be able to keep food on the table and a roof over their heads, so they're not around a lot. And the gangs are an attractive outlet and connection for kids. Gangs are not a new thing. Gangs have been around a long, long time. And it would be challenging to totally get rid of them, near impossible. What we can do is, through proactivity and good police work, is find them before they become a statistic and try and get them out. Part of our project right now, which is the youth opioid response, we're also focusing on kids at risk for gang activity, and we're pulling them into other outlets such as the gym or art or, you know, other avenues where they can meet like-minded individuals and form those bonds with those kids in healthy outlets versus unhealthy gang activity.
In his closing remarks, Chief Cervenka urged residents of Fort Bragg to look out for one another and report any suspicious activities.
You know, if you see something, say something. The information received was not widely known, and a lot of times it would be difficult. We can't work a case on every instance, but we keep all those tips and all that information, and because somebody was brave enough to come forward with information, it prevented a tragedy that we don't know when would have happened. So the more we can, and it also protected the person we arrested, because if you're going to be involved in that lifestyle with firearms and guns, there's a chance that people will shoot back at you. So this person's life was probably spared, and maybe this person will get a message and will get put on the right track earlier on, and we can intervene now, and the juvenile justice system can intervene and offer therapy and, you know, many different resources in an effort to save this person from the gangs.
Anyone with additional information on suspected gang activity can contact the Fort Bragg Police Department at 707-961-2800. Or to learn more about the programs they offer, you can go online to city.fortbragg.com. In state news, EPA awards $4.3 billion to 30 states for climate emissions and air pollution mitigation projects.
California will get nearly $500 million of the federal EPA grant money. Democratic Senator Alex Padilla of California announced today that the money from the Climate Pollution Reduction Grant will be used for transportation and freight decarbonization at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach. Padilla says 40% of the nation's imports come through the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach and are transported by trucks around the nation. He said the truck exhaust causes air pollution in the nearby communities and adds heat-trapping carbon, which contributes to climate change.
California has led the way in so many areas, whether it's renewable energy, energy efficiency and conservation in residences and even in office buildings, electric vehicles. But that's not enough. We have to do more in the heavy duty sector. So we're going to keep working to replace dirty diesel trucks and other polluting equipment and make historic investments in zero emissions infrastructure.
Vanessa Delgado is the chair of the South Coast Air Quality Management District. She says transportation accounts for more than 50% of greenhouse gas emissions and nearly 80% of air pollution within the South Coast Basin. She said the grant will be invested in zero-emission technology and vehicles. She added that cutting emission at the ports will reduce 12 million metric tons of carbon emissions over the course of 25 years, and that's not all.
We will see 1,600 tons of smog-forming emissions, 8 tons of fine particulate matter, and 30 tons of diesel particulate matter every year. Amazing reductions. And this means cleaner air for our loved ones, our neighbors, and our children. But that's not all. This grant includes a partnership with labor, universities, colleges, and NGOs for workforce training. And it will result in almost 44,000 jobs nationwide.
The EPA's national grants are paid for by the 2022 climate law approved by congressional Democrats. The law, known as the Inflation Reduction Act, includes nearly $400 billion to accelerate the expansion of clean energy, such as wind and solar power. It also aims to speed the nation's transition away from fossil fuels like oil, coal, and natural gas that are the main cause of climate change. For KPFA, I'm Yiyun Chan.
In national news, thousands protest Netanyahu address to Congress and call for an end to the Gaza war. Audi McAfee reports.
It was Netanyahu's fourth address to the U.S. Congress as Israeli Prime Minister. He's calling full U.S. backing for his fight against Hamas and other Iran-backed groups. Thousands of demonstrators filled several blocks protesting his address as they carried Palestinian flags and signs that called for the arrest of the prime minister. Police blocked protesters from getting too close to the Capitol building and even sprayed some with pepper spray. Rama Ali Kassad is a member of the Palestinian Community Network. She addressed a large crowd at the rally.
Today we are here to remind these war criminals, to remind these butchers, to remind these cowards, your days in power are numbered.
According to the Gaza Health Ministry, more than 39,000 Palestinians have been killed in the war. A day before Netanyahu's speech, protesters attempted a sit-in at the Cannon Building, which houses congressional offices. According to the Capitol Police, about 200 people were arrested. Aya Ziada is a member of the group American Muslims for Palestine. She says people need to do more than talk to accomplish a ceasefire.
We must channel our outrage into action. It's not enough to condemn these actions with words. We must demand that our leaders uphold international law and human rights, no matter how tiring it may become for us. The occupation and apartheid must end.
More than 50 Democratic lawmakers boycotted Netanyahu's speech, citing concerns over the high civilian casualty figures in Gaza. Michigan Representative Rashida Tlaib is the only Palestinian-American in Congress. She showed up at the speech dressed in a keffiyeh, or traditional Palestinian scarf, and held a sign that read war criminal as Netanyahu spoke. March organizer Leanne Filon is with the Answer Coalition. She said her group and others will continue to speak out until the war is over.
We will continue building this movement. We will continue building our forces. We will march today, and we will continue organizing and marching because we know that the historical place for us to be is the ones who are determining our own future. And that future has no place for genocide and has all the room for the Palestinian people's sovereignty and freedom and self-determination.
Officials from Egypt, Israel, the United States, and Qatar are scheduled to meet in Doha, Qatar on Thursday to resume talks over a proposed three-phase ceasefire to end the war and free the remaining hostages. For KPFA News, I'm Audie McAfee.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez. And thanks to our reporters, Eun Chan and Audie McAfee. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.